bastard, please. This is all. Good. Right, so.
Yes. Well, I'm looking at this polynomial. It's a polynomial in x squared. Yeah, so you can just replace x squared by y. And this is a polynomial of large degree. Yeah.
So we use Mathematica and we select the coefficients which are less or equal than 20.
Yeah. So there is a huge number of coefficients, like 2 to power 20 or something. Yeah? We're just looking at the ones that are less than 20, and then we look at our favorite number, which is 13. Yeah. Today is the 13th of November.
So we count the number of times 13 appears here. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's all.
Now, we maybe look for a different number. 13 has a particular feature, right? It's a prime number. So, maybe we look at the composite number, let's say 10, yeah? I taught fundamental mathematics undergraduate course a couple of times during the last 4 or 5 years, so this is one of the favorite problems. So, you know, give them a large number and they have to find the last 2 digits, so, yeah?
So, for 10 it's easy. Let's try with 10. How many times is in 10 is going to appear here? Easy. 1, 2. Not too many times. 3. On the third line from the bottom, let's see. Oh yeah. Very big.
I just want to about the last thing you do, the last 2 digits you have to do. You like to be told that you're about 5 of 10. Yeah, so 5 of 13 is 12, 5 of 10 is 1. So the conjecture is that any integer, you know, I mean, if you are looking at this,
and it's a fact, it's not a conjecture, actually. It's not too hard to prove. It's probably well known. So
the conjecture is that if you are looking at this polynomial, again, it doesn't matter that it is a polynomial in x squared, yeah, and you look at the Fourier series, it is not a polynomial, it's a Fourier series, yeah. Any positive integer is going to appear exactly 5 of 10 times. Yeah? So in principle, at least, if you want to decide whether or not a number is prime, you don't have to perform any division. Yeah? Just multiply this polynomial enough many times. Obviously, I mean, this is not a very practical
but it works, at least, in principle.
Right, now, I'd like to try to explain a little bit
what is the relation with continued fractions and with IF algebras. So, no, five of one, well, it's just one by definition, yeah? And 5 of 2 is 1, so... No. Oh, there is only 1. No, that's not because... What?
I mean, this polynomial is a very constant, yeah? Just proper, it's magic. I mean, there is only 1, 2. Oh, they only want 2. No, but I don't count this one. Well, this is symmetric, yeah, so I'm looking only at the first half. Okay. This is symmetric. Yeah, you multiply by 2.
Okay, so,
continued fraction. So, the continued fraction is just a sequence of positive integers, yeah? And we know that we have a one-to-one correspondence between irrational numbers in the interval 0, 1 and sequences of positive integers. In one direction, if we know the number, if the number theta is given,
then we find the digits,
A1, A2, and so on, just iterating the so-called Gauss map that sends x into the fractional part of 1 over x. And the Gauss map acts very nicely on the continuous fraction. It just cuts off the first digit. Yeah, so it's like the adjoint of a shift, you know?
We know that any rational number has a unique representation in continuous fraction, which I'm going to discuss in a second.
Now, there is a peculiar thing about rational numbers, and this is also going to play a role. A rational number does not have a unique representation. Yeah, as a continuous fraction, in the sense that you can always add a 1 at the end. Yeah, so you have this little problem, so you have to make a choice all the time. Okay?
So 1 comma 2 is 1 third, which is the same as 3.
Okay, now, given the digits, given the sequence of digits, A1 up to AN, I mean, you just look at the so-called N approximants, you just construct this this fraction, and it's very easy to notice that actually this, the sequence of approximants is a Cauchy sequence simply because Pn plus 1 Qn minus Pn Qn plus 1 is 1, so we get 1 over Pn Qn plus 1, and this is probably less than 1 over 4 to the N, or doesn't matter, maybe 3 to the N, I don't know. It's an exponential. Let me get here. Okay. Now, matrix notation, which we like very much, to use just 2 by 2 matrices, everything revolves around 2 by 2 matrices.
Yeah, yeah.
These positive integers, which appear in the approximant, Pn and Qn, can be obtained just multiplying matrices of this form. So we start with A1, 1, 1, 0, yeah? And I multiply on the left by A2, A3, and An, so, yeah? So these are the digits, right? So we get these integers, so then how do we get the numbers? So we just divide Pn by Qn, or Pn minus 1 by Qn minus 1. Yeah? As a quick corollary of this, if you just apply the determinant, you get that minus 1 to power n is equal to Pn minus 1 Qn minus Pn Qn minus 1, yeah? Which is the familiar relation of continuous fractions. Now, just a little observation consists in the fact that you multiply 2 consecutive matrices of this form, A1, 1, 0, B1, 1, 0, the result is going to be the same as multiplying the power, the A power of this matrix, 1, 1, 0, 1, and the B power of 1, 0, 1, 1, which is just the transpose of B, obviously. Okay, so this is one fact. Now, using this fact and using the continuous fraction algorithm, one can show that actually these 2 matrices, A and B, are free. Yeah? When you consider only positive exponents, okay? So these 2 matrices are going to generate canonically the free semigroup on 2 generators. And it's interesting, at least for me, that, the proof is actually the continuous fraction algorithm, or it's on the Euclidean algorithm. It's a bit surprising. It was for me a little bit surprising because,
usually when you talk about
representations. Now, if you square these 2 matrices, it's a pretty standard example. This is maybe content. This certain content in the book by the Hartmann geometric group theory. The squares of these 2 matrices are going to generate a copy of the free group on 2 generators, but then they are not free because they satisfy this order 4 relation. It's just an observation. Now, just to share that there is some interesting thing around this, which is not related with operator algebra, but with number theory and with the Gauss map. So I can, for instance, try to look at the number of words in the free semigroup on 2 generators with the property that the spectra values are equivalent to the trace. Asymptotically, they are the same. Yeah? Lambda plus lambda inverse is
I think logically the same thing as lambda is lambda when lambda is very large. We trace strictly greater than 2 because I have infinity many of trace 2, 1 n 0 1, and trace less or equal than capital N, but like too many of these are there. And it's possible to count them. We get a formula like the phi 1 n squared log n plus phi n squared plus some error term. Now, this is of some interest because this has some applications, so it improves on a previous result of Galifos, Luke, Pepper, and Schneider about the partition function of certain what they call far spin chain model. And on the other hand, because it has a nice corollary concerning the periodic point of the Gauss map. Okay? So let's see, what are the periodic points of the Gauss map? It's not hard to see because of the way the Gauss map acts on the continuous fraction, that the periodic point is actually, yeah, a finite sequence, say, 1 up to AN0, yeah? And this is a so-called reduced quadratic irrational. Now, there is a way of defining the length, numbers of this form. You can either use the spectral radius, actually the logarithm of the spectral radius of a certain matrix. This is one of those matrices that I described earlier on. Or if you want to think geometrically, I mean, it turns out that this is the same thing as the length of the associated closed geodesic on the modular surface H on SL2Z. And the corollary is that, okay, so I mean, there is an asymptotic formula for this. So this looks like a constant times e to the x. But then there is also an error term which is pretty good, e to 7x over x. And this improves some previous result of a French mathematician called Berger, which was true with different techniques. So now, the point is that I'm stating all these results because, I mean, in the model that I'm going to describe next, this comes down to counting certain paths on a certain diagram. Yeah, so I mean this results for some combinatorial significance, not only number theoretical one. Right, so next thing that I want to mention is that the so-called Faraday tessellation, this is the terminology used by people in dynamical system, by Caroline Sirius, for instance. So, so the Faraday tessellation looks like this. You know, it looks like a basic picture somehow. So we start with this fundamental domain, okay, F, and then we apply these two matrices, B and A. B is just translation by one on the right, and A is going to transform this domain into this one, yeah? And then when we apply powers, successive powers of A and B, we see that we get something like a quadratic decomposition of this strip, yeah? And this is maybe the second proof, yeah? For the fact that this is a geometric proof of the fact that these two matrices are free, they generate a free, or a copy of the free semigroup on two generators. Now, what is central in this picture is the so-called median construction, which is very elementary. This is usually the kind of mistake that our undergraduate students are doing before getting maybe the first steps in their life. Or, when they add two fractions like this, they say that, okay, this is p plus p prime over q plus q prime. In some cases, this is not a very bad mistake, actually. It's not a very bad error. This is what you should do, actually, if you are interested in continuous fractions, but only when p prime q minus p q prime is equal to 1, only for this kind of numbers, you do the right thing. So, if you want, you can represent this in this little diagram here, so you start with p over q, p prime over q prime, satisfying this determinant 1 condition, and then you perform the median median construction. So what is important is that these two numbers, these two pairs of numbers, of rational numbers, are going to satisfy each of them the same condition. So that's
No.
What we want to do is to iterate this construction, and when we do this, we get a diagram of this form, which some people call the Pascal triangle with memory. Okay? So you see, we start with this diagram, yeah? Then we just iterate the median construction. Okay? So why is this called the Pascal triangle with memory? This is for very good reason, because the fifth step, yeah? It's like the Pascal triangle somehow, but we also keep the memory into account. And this makes things much more complicated, definitely much more complicated, this memory. We can view this as we can regard this as a Bratelli diagram. Yeah? And then we have an IF algebra if we do this. Yeah? And now we try maybe to label the vertices in this Bratelli diagram. What would be a natural way of labeling vertices? I mean, we have two ways of labeling vertices, yeah? Obviously, we can use, if you want, vertical and horizontal coordinates, the usual way. Yeah, we do the bookkeeping in a Bratelli diagram. Or we can use this median construction. So we start with this distinguished vertex. We look at z over 1, 1 over 1, these two vertices. Yeah, and then we iterate according to the median construction, according to the median rule. And there are some interesting features here for these numbers. One is that for consecutive neighbors, C over D and A over B, we always have this determinant one condition, yeah, which is exactly what I mentioned earlier on about the median construction. Now, if you want to look at the so-called new stuff at level n, yeah, so you look at this new stuff at each level, you get continual fractions a1 up to at with sum of digits equal to n. Yeah, so this is very something that you notice, and then you prove this is actually how to show it. Once you notice a combinatorial property, then you can prove it by induction. But usually very complicated to prove it. Okay, so according to this fact, so we have what we get here is in particular an enumeration of rational numbers. So we have a proof of the fact that rational numbers are countable. Good stuff. Now, there is some analysis here. And the analysis that has been done so far involves around the so-called Minkowski question mark function. So what is the Minkowski question function doing here? Right, so let's see. So you start with two consecutive vertices, yeah? And you count how many vertices you have at each level. Obviously at level n, you have 2 to the n plus 1 vertices. Okay, that's pretty inconclusive. Because of the way this construction goes somehow. So if you look at these two numbers, 1/4 and 1/3, yeah, the Minkowski, so this is let's see which level is this. So 1, 2, 3, 4. I think this should be something like 3/8 or something like that according to this definition. Yeah, if you are looking carefully. So to this point you assign 1/2, yeah. 1/3 you are going to assign 1/4, to this one you assign 1/2, 3/4, then 1/8, 1/4, 3/8, here it is, yeah, 1/2 and so on. Yeah? So in this way we get the map from rational numbers into the unity interval with this property. Okay? And, if you place carefully at this, and do a little bit of work, you see that you can end up with a short formula which is known to Minkowski, yeah, he introduced this function. This you get this alternating figure. I think he introduced the notation because it's a question mark what this is in general. Yeah? So This map has some interesting properties. It is strictly increasing. It is singular, like the Cantor map, in some sense, yeah? And it has some other important features, for me at least. So it takes rational numbers into dyadic, the one-to-one correspondence between rational numbers and dyadic. And it takes also quadratic irrationals, yeah, which are numbers of interest in number theory, and even in ergodic theory in certain problems, yeah, into rational numbers. Okay? So that's more than a one-to-one correspondence between rationals and dyadics. Now there are some applications. Okay, so this has been studied by Minkowski, Danjoua, Salem, and other people. I think Salem wrote his paper in the 40s, maybe the last paper on the subject. And there was some more recent work on some properties of this map, but there is, recent work is not really staggering, at least in my opinion. There are some nice applications, in my opinion, though, to number theory. One is due to Hatta, which did some very interesting computations in the 90s. So here's some formulas for the Euler gamma constant, for instance, which are related with some Fourier analysis on dyadics, in some sense. And some more recent work of Hayes and of Jeff Waller, 2006. I'm not sure whether the paper has appeared there.
Yeah,
what's
here? Journal of Mathematics, and it's interesting because Hayes and Waller, so they are also using the theory of Martingale in order to prove some results for the Delfantine approximation.
Now, okay, I have one more remark, or maybe I see this slide on the board. So one more remark here, which is related with the first slide in the statistical quiz, is the following one. So you start you enumerate. You enumerate the denominators of these labels. Yeah, but you forget about the last string. So it's like throwing away an ideal for dimension one. You forget about this one. So you are looking at these numbers: 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, 2, 3, 1, 4, so on. Yeah, but you have to be careful because you have to repeat them somehow. And then it turns out that this is a very well-known and very well-studied sequence, and this is, I found the connection with this sequence just browsing on the internet, actually. I entered, there's a page, for sequences, and you enter maybe the first 10 tens, and then you get 10 broco, and you also get the reference.
You can different.
Yeah, it's different. The reason for which this is different, all numbers appear with infinite multiplicity here. You see, because I'm also taking into account the old stuff. Yeah, in the example that I gave you in the beginning, I only focused on the new stuff. Yeah, which means that I take theta of x, I add theta of minus x, and I divide by 2. So, okay? So that's why in that one, I got that 1 plus x squared. Yeah, there are some small differences. So this is not exactly, yeah, you're right. So, okay, now let's try to look a little bit at this diagram from the point of view of IF algebra, so for operator algebra. So, usually when people talk about continuous fractions and operator algebra, they think about the irrational rotation algebra, and they think about the Efrosian algebra. So let me just remind you that the Efrosian algebra is an IF algebra with this Bratelli diagram, yeah? And, I just want to introduce a notation, so by KT I'm going to denote the IF algebra of unitized compact operators, so the Bratelli diagram looks like this for the unitized compact, so I don't think I need to keep this slide. Now, so what happens if you look carefully on this Pascal triangle with memory, you are going to figure out that you inside this, the diagram, you have some sub-diagrams of this shape. Yeah? Somehow. So a sub-diagram of this shape is going to give you the same IF algebra as a sub-diagram of this shape. Because you see, yeah, you see what happens here. So you jump some steps in the inductive limit. Right? And then what happens here, so you can maybe just with step two, so you just swap the labels. Yeah, so here you swap C and D, it can be going this way. Yeah? And then you swap F and D and so on. So you see that, yeah, you get the same diagram as the Fourier diagram inside. And doing things carefully, one can actually prove something more. It's not, the proof is not complicated, it's just being careful about writing things down. One can show that the primitive ideals of A are given by ideals of the following form. I'm going to describe these ideals in a second. I theta for irrational theta, and for rational theta I get three kinds of ideals, I theta plus and I theta minus. And when theta is irrational, the primitive quotient is just the Fourier algebra. And when theta is rational, so I get as a quotient, so theta is P over Q, I get as a quotient MQ, Q by Q matrices, yeah? Or I get expansions of MQ or MQ prime by the compact operators. So Q prime is something that's related with this P over Q. So Q prime is the multiplicative inverse, actually. I think of P modulo Q or something like that. And actually, the picture is going to look like this, roughly. So if theta is irrational, yeah? So I have the diagram of the ideal in blue. Yeah, this is the border line. So I have really two components of this ideal. And for the quotient, so I get, you know, the diagram that I have shown on the previous slide. Okay? Now when theta is rational, so I get three kinds of ideals. So this is how we get Q by Q matrices, so 3 by 3 matrices in this case, inside the Bratelli diagram of A. Okay? And for those extensions by compact, so we get something that's going to look like this. There are three different types of primitive ideas for rational numbers. For each rational, yes. And at the end point, I have two only. Yeah, clearly. Yeah, but inside the interval 0, 1, for each rational, there are three kinds of primitive ideas. For irrationals, there is only one, which is the Fourier. Yeah. Now, obviously, there is some resemblance with the representations of the three-dimensional discrete Heisenberg group. So this is something that is good to notice, but so I can say about this. Yeah. And another remark is that if you throw away these singular ideas, so the ideas with problems in compact operators in the quotient, yeah? For the rational values, yeah. So what you get a space that is homomorphic to the interval 0, 1. Yeah. So here you have a construction of 0, 1 just from Bratelli diagrams and the primitive spectrum, the construction of the real number. Second, you cannot see addition very well on this one. If you want to see addition, it's probably possible to do this, but it's not. I mean, these are continuous fractions, so you don't have a very good rule for addition. Yeah, it is Hausdorff. Yeah, it's the same topology, but after throwing away this, you know. No, it's not Hausdorff. No, obviously, yeah. Now, we have an IF algebra, so we'd like to look at certain standard features of this. One is the dimension group, yeah? And actually I'm not going to look at the dimension group of the algebra A because this is a little bit too complicated. I have some identification, so it's a bit more complicated to describe. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to factor by this idea. Yeah? So I'm just going to look at this quotient.
Okay? Now, for N6, we look at the following polynomial alternation by x inverse. So we look at 1, x plus x inverse, x squared plus x to minus 2, x to the 4 plus x to minus 4, and so on. Obviously, we have some relations between them because x plus x inverse squared is not, as everybody knows, x squared plus x to minus 2. We have to subtract the 2. Yeah, and things get a little bit more complicated in general. Now, we put all these things in a sum. Yeah, so we get the polynomial in x and x inverse. And we look at the inductive limit of this. And here is how the picture is going to look like. So let's see. So on one hand, we have the inclusion between building blocks from level n to level n plus 1. And when we look at the inclusion between polynomials, this is the relation that we are going to get here, actually. So beta n p of x is x inverse plus 1 plus x times p of x squared. Yeah? This x squared is causing a lot of problems, actually. This is going to cause a lot of problems. Now, if you are thinking about the usual Pascal triangle, yeah, so what happens here, you multiply by 1 plus x, the polynomial p of x, yeah, so the situation here is obviously different. And, well, you can maybe try to give a slightly better description, but the final description is not going to be very neat for this one. So I don't know about a very neat description. Anyway, the bottom line is that this description relies on the following property of this power series. So you look at the infinite product of 1 plus x to 2 to the k plus x to 2 to the k plus 1. Okay? And this is going to satisfy this equation. Yeah, this functional equation. It's very easy to see. Yeah, so when you plug x squared into x, yeah, you pull this factor, then you multiply by theta of x squared. And the coefficients, q1, q2, q3, are exactly these numbers. So 1, 2, 1, 3, 2, 3, 1, 4, 3, 5. Yeah, so I'm counting all the numbers from the old stuff and from the new stuff. Yeah? And this is basically, I mean, this is an observation which is due to Karlitz. It's an odd observation of Karlitz. Certainly we didn't put it in this framework. But this is how I found it. So looking for the Sternberger sequence. Now, traces. Well, it is a nice exercise to show that the irrational rotation algebra has a unique trace. This is slightly more complicated than showing that it has that it is simple. Yeah, because if you want to show that it is simple, you can use Euler's criterion, and it's not too hard to prove it. But if you want to show that it has a unique trace, maybe there is a little bit of work to do. And you have to use essentially the continuous function algorithm. Right, so I'd like to try to give a description of traces on this algebra. And again, it's not too difficult to show that actually traces on this algebra are in one-to-one correspondence with functions taking values in the interval 0, 1 and defined on the binary tree this time. Okay, so they are no longer defined on a triangle with memory or this is just the binary tree in this representation. And it's not hard to see this because, you know the values of these three points, so you find the value here, you know the value of the trace here, here and here, then you find the value of the trace here, and this is how it goes. So you have some compatibility conditions, and those compatibility conditions can be captured briefly in a condition like this. So if I just fix a vertex, yeah, the value of the trace, the value alpha, should be greater or equal than the value of the trace of this minimal, all these minimal projections that approach asymptotically this vertical line. And this should be the case for any alpha. Yeah, so this is the condition on for, and if you have some weights at the vertices of the binary tree, yeah, you have these conditions to impose if you want to know for sure that you end up with a trace on the IF algebra. Now, I mean, you can write this in a different way, yeah, if you just want to look set this Minkowski question mark function so we can define this for instance. I mean, you can view this as functions on rational numbers in 0, 1, satisfying these three compatibility conditions. Yeah? So this is a condition which is given in terms of the continuous fraction decomposition of the label of the vertex, the label of the vertex of C2. Yeah? And, well, I'm writing this when 80 is greater or equal than 2, so I'm, so here, if I have 1, so I just write 80 plus 1 instead of 80 comma 1. It's the same thing. Yeah? And in particular, if you want to see how to get back that trace on the Eplochian algebra, this is what you do. So you start with an irrational number, you look at the approximants of theta, and you define the function phi on Q in the following way. So phi of 0 is going to be 0. Phi applied on rational numbers of this form, A1 up P minus 1 and K, are going to be just the errors that you get by approximating, yeah, for any K up to AT, and then you take 0. So if you are looking at that picture, you can pretty clearly see that actually you are approximating somehow that time. That's just a way of writing things down that is not so easy. Complicated stuff. It sounds like eight. Pardon? Okay. So if we compose this with the, we can look at the embedding of C theta into A theta, look at the trace on A theta, and compose it with this pi theta with this quotient, so then we just get the trace on A induced by the unique trace on A theta in this way. So they are going to be the same because, yeah. So that's the previous description. Now, there is another thing that people, especially in some parts of theory, were interested in. This is a description by generators and relations, and this comes from analogy with the description of the Gaikar algebra from that you can find in the book of Dow Evans and Yasuka Wahigashi, for instance. You can consider projections, so at level n, so you look at projections on segments like this, called the CN. You can look at projections on FN, yeah? So I'm talking about the path algebra model for IF algebra. And you can look at the following types of partial isometry. So you have this, something like some sort of diamond, but they are going to be different. In the case of the Gaikar algebra, what do you get? You have a Pascal triangle, so you only get these kind of projections, yeah? And here you have only one type because you get some diamonds like this. Yeah, so here we have two types of partial isometries. And it's possible to derive some relations, but things look really very complicated here. Yeah, anyway, the bottom line is that we get three families of mutually commuting projections. So I mean that the ES commute between them, the SN commute between them, the GN commute between them, yeah? And we know how to describe the VN star and VN, yeah, and we have some relations between them, and as I said, they're kind of cumbersome to write down. What is somehow interesting here is that still some sort of grading survives in this framework. So if you are thinking about the break group BN generated by sigma 1, sigma n minus 1, subject to the usual commutation relations, and you send sigma I to VI minus 1, say, and sigma I to WI, then you get two representations of the break group, yeah? Two representations of the break group, and I'm going to satisfy some relations of this type, yeah, some relations of this type, which are Young-Baxter equation relations, but this is Young-Baxter without the tensor product in some sense. There is no Tesla product here. This is a problem. We don't have much duplication. We just have the Euclidean algorithm. And trying somehow to do some analogy with the temporal leap case, it's possible to isolate for any tau in the interval 0, 1 over 4 two families of projections, EN and FN, which are cooked up from BN, from the two families of partial isometries, BN and WN, we satisfy the following relations. So EN, EN plus 1, EN is tau EN, but then I have to multiply here by a sub-projection. So EN plus 2 is a sub-projection of EN. Yeah, so for temporal leap we will get 1 here. Yeah, so here we get a sub-projection. And for EN plus 1, EN, EN plus 1, we get a sub-projection GN of EN plus 1. And we get similar relations for FN, and there are some relations between these two families, EN and FN, which can be explicitly described. So, if I have something like 4 more minutes or so, 4 or 5 minutes. So I'd like to conclude with some problems, questions. So, one major problem here, I mean, it's the relational rotation algebra that is embedded into the Fprochem. So it's natural to ask whether the continuous field of Phi Theta is going to embed into this IF algebra. So I don't know, I'm not really an expert in continuous fields, so I don't know whether there is an obvious abstraction for this. But if there is one, maybe we can look for a larger algebra like a tensor compact or something like that. So this is one question. Another question is whether it would be possible to give a more handy description of this algebra using maybe generators and relations, or, you know. Because this seems to be somehow, you know, close to the Guaikar algebra, although they are different. Yeah, the Guaikar has countable spectrum, this has uncountable spectrum. Nevertheless, yeah, the Guaikar is just a fixed point algebra, so the question is, well, is there a way of representing A as some fixed point algebra, or maybe producing A from two copies of the Guaikar algebra? Because if you are looking at the graphs at the level of diagrams, so you have some kind of gluing process between two copies of the Pascal triangle. Yeah? But at the level of algebras, I don't know, I have no idea. This is not a free product. That's clear. So yeah, if there is an algebraic procedure, this should be maybe slightly more more intricate. Third natural question is maybe looking at other tessellations of the upper half plane. You can think maybe about subgroup, finite index subgroup of SL2Z, and just look at the positive part here. And you can extract actually some sub-tessellations from the finite tessellation and try to construct Bratelli diagrams, but it's very very hard to keep track on what is going on. Because here I have the generating function, at least I can do some things. Yeah, with that function theta. Perfect. And the first problem, which might be something that one could do, I mean, maybe this is not that complicated, is about trying to find symmetries of the algebra. Trying to find symmetries of the algebra. By symmetries, I mean automorphies, endomorphies, or unital completely positive maps. And there are actually I have a problem in finding one slide. I have it somewhere. But anyway, I can tell you what are those symmetries. Okay, now I got it. So there are three kinds of interesting transformations that could maybe have some non-commutative counterparts here. One is the Gauss map. Yeah? So the Gauss map is going to act naturally on the path. So it's going to act naturally on the Hilbert space associated to this IF algebra. But it is not going to leave the IF algebra itself invariant. Yeah? But maybe, I don't know, if you are looking at some quotients or maybe, yeah, maybe there is an analog of producing an automorphism or maybe even a UCP map, something like a shift that would, yeah, act on this IF algebra. It would be nice to have a non-commutative analog of the Gauss map. And there are two other maps which are related with the Gauss map. There is another map, sorry. And this has two inverses, actually. So there are three. So this is a so-called Phi map, which takes x into x over 1 minus x, for x between 0 and 1 half, and into 1 minus x over x. So it just looks like this. I'll finish in 30 seconds. Yeah. And if you are looking at the action on the continuous fraction, so in one, I mean, it's going to be defined in this way, depending on whether or not a1 is in the first half or the second half of the interval 0, 1. And this has two inverses, which also act naturally on the continuous fractions, right? And there are some other maps, but I'm not going to discuss those today. So I'm just going to mention the Gauss map and the Faraday map. And the question is whether there are some non-commutative analogs of these maps, yeah, related with this construction, with this Hilbert space and with this algebra. Thank you very much. No, it doesn't fit over. Yeah. For the rational beta, we don't have.
Over the rational
beta. Yeah, that's this one. There is no theta. No, but I didn't say anything. It's Q by Q matrices. No, there is some theta, but it's Q by Q matrices.
Is there a continuous field?
I didn't check this carefully, but I suspect that this might be true, that you get a continuous field, maybe if you... Is it possible with theta and Q by Q matrices?
It's not an
Yeah, that's why I said that maybe one has to enlarge somehow. Maybe tensor with compacts, or I don't know. It could be if there is no obvious subtraction. So I don't know whether there is an obvious subtraction. I mean, I'm asking the experts. No, they don't. They follow from this diagram, actually. Yeah, they follow from this diagram. So if you want to prove the formula that I start with on the first slide, you do some induction on this.
The estimates, no.
But in order to get those estimates, I'm using this little thing that these two algebras A and B that generate the free group on two generators somehow. You understand? I mean the way people were counting the number of products of matrices of works was different. So they were using L functions and it was a much more complicated approach and transfer operators and So this was more direct and it led to better asymptotic formula. But that's the only thing.
So it doesn't
operate
double,
Yes. But it comes down actually. I mean, to counting certain paths on this diagram. Yeah. So the problem of counting paths with some conditions on this diagram is not easy. Although the diagram looks very, the tessellation is very homogeneous. Yeah. So you'd expect things to
work very, very easily, but somehow they don't.
We should compare them because if this is natural, this is your is canonical, so there should be some.
Yeah, the table tennis. Yeah, this is how, yeah, if you want to show that this two matrix is 1, 2, 0, 1, and yeah, there is a lemma of Klein, which some people like Delahart, they call the table tennis. I think it's due to Klein, that lemma. I don't think Klein was playing table tennis.